all of these exact same things that I learned over 40 years as an entrepreneur, all of these little tips and tricks and secrets of how to break apart a problem, about triage and focus and culture, were equally valid no matter what your dream was. That everybody has these ideas, and the process of taking an idea and making it real is the same whether you're trying to launch a multi-million dollar tech startup or whether you just want to do something better with your own life. And so my passion from that point forward began being that my job is to take these people who have these ideas and feel that they can't go anywhere with them unless I have a degree, unless I have money, unless I have a co-founder, unless I have a backer, blah, 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 I've heard them all, and convince them that that's bullshit, that there are ways to get started, that it is not as complicated or as difficult or expensive as you think it is, and that the real barrier to getting started is you.
Okay, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and by trade and training, I'm a sport and performance psychologist, as well as the co-founder of Compete to Create. And if you like this podcast and you haven't checked out Compete to Create yet, I really hope that you do. It would mean a lot to me. And the whole idea behind this podcast, behind these conversations, is to learn from people who have committed their life efforts towards mastery of self. And so we use craft as an excuse to really figure out what are the mechanics, what are the processes, what are the practices that they go through to build themselves to be resilient and dynamic, to be able to flourish in a life of high stress and high consequence, and when it's really on the line. How do they train their mind to become their very best? Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product, and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out HIMSS. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's HIMSS, HIMSS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMSS.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Okay, this week's conversation is with Mark Randolph. He is an absolute vet in Silicon Valley. As an entrepreneur, advisor, and an investor, you know his work. Mark is the co-founder of Netflix, and he also served as their founding CEO, as the executive producer of their website, and as a member of their board of directors. And talk about being involved as a founder, co-founder, spinning up the website, being, you know, the CEO at the helm, and also serving to guide on their board of directors. I mean, he really has a depth of knowledge about what it takes to build a titan, not only in an industry, but a titan of a business. Although he is best known for starting Netflix, Mark's career as an entrepreneur spans more than four decades. He's founded or co-founded more than half a dozen other successful startups. He's mentored rising entrepreneurs, including the co-founders of Looker Data, which recently sold to Google for $2.6 billion. How about it? And he's also invested in numerous successful tech ventures as well. Not only that, not only does he understand business at that level, but he also is on the board of the environmental advocacy group 1% for the Planet. If you're not familiar with that, I really want you to go check that out. It is a phenomenal program. And so he's got roots in the outdoors, and he also chairs, talk about a renaissance man, the National Outdoor Leadership School's Board of Trustees. I love this conversation for not only the wisdom and the insight and the practicality of it, but just the well-rounded nature of Silicon Valley to outdoors, to doing good for the planet, for mentoring young people, and also building businesses that, you know, were not even thought of to be an industry, and he built it from ground up. I mean, I love this conversation, as you can tell. And we dive into how he developed with his co-founder, Reed Hastings, developed the idea for Netflix, like how that was born and how that came to be, but also the ways that he worked to create strong organizational culture and why, according to him, focus is the key for any entrepreneur. So with that, let's jump right into this week's conversation with the legend, Mark Randolph. Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Oh, good. Okay, so I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. The company you built, one of the companies, is a staple in most households and certainly ours. And so congratulations on your body work with Netflix and Macworld and some of the other ventures that you've been part of. So I'm super excited to be here with you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning as well.
Okay, so I want to start with a moment in time. And I want to understand where you came from, just to get some context, what it was like growing up. But I want to start with this particular moment in time, which is the car ride where you and your co-founder of Netflix, Reed Hastings, were sorting out and envisioning this idea of what eventually turned into Netflix. Can you bring me into that moment or the series of moments?
Well, certainly. But first, let's kind of set the context. This was in 1997. So this is quite a while ago. And this is at a point where we're in many ways kind of just at the dawn of the internet age. And, you know, I was living in just outside of Silicon Valley, California. So I was certainly pretty aware of what was happening technologically. And at that point, there were some interesting things going on in my life as well. And specifically, I was on the verge of being out of a job. One of the companies that I was working for was being acquired, and it was one of those good acquisitions where they actually in some ways pay you to stick around, the golden handcuffs, so to speak. But then I knew it would only be about a month and I'd be on the street again. But for me, someone who kind of thrives on chaos, this wasn't a depressing thought. This was like an opportunity. It was a chance to do something new. And at that time, the company that was being acquired had been founded and was being run by someone named Reed Hastings, who was a friend of mine. And Reed was also going to be losing his job in this acquisition. And Reed and I were carpool buddies. And we used to drive back and forth from where we lived in a little town called Santa Cruz, up and over the Santa Cruz Mountains, on this winding highway to our offices in Sunnyvale, California, right in the heart of Silicon Valley. And that's when and where this was taking place. And on these car rides, we were brainstorming the next business we wanted to start. And more specifically, it was really the next business that I wanted to start. I had already either been a founder or been part of the founding teams of five previous startups. So it was pretty natural thinking to me that if I was leaving one company, well, let's just start another one. And Reed wasn't quite in the same place. He was really in this feeling that he wanted to do a big give back. He wanted to change the world of education, and he was going to go get a higher degree in education. But, you know, once you're an entrepreneur, you're always an entrepreneur. And Reed wanted to keep his finger in this entrepreneurial pie, so to speak. And so the agreement we had was that he was going to be the angel investor, that we'd come up with an idea together. He would fund it, I would start it and run it, and off we'd go. And that's what found us in this car, driving on the hilly turns of Highway 17, going up and over this Santa Cruz Mountains every morning for months, brainstorming ideas. And although, of course, you know, jumping to the end, what came out of it was Netflix. This was not that Reed and I were both videophiles, that we were both debating who the best French directors were. We were both extremely proletarian tastes. You know, we were like any other person. And in fact, at that point, doing something in video was probably the furthest thing from my mind. I really only had the criteria that I wanted to do something that involved selling things on the internet, and if possible, involved personalization or subscription, both of things I'd had some experience in. And that was it. So these ideas that we were brainstorming were kind of out there. You know, one of them I remember pitching Reed was for personalized shampoo. I told, okay, here's how it's gonna work, Reed. They're gonna have people cut off a lock of their hair and mail it to us. And our scientists will formulate a custom shampoo just for them, and then they'll subscribe to it. And Reed's role in these conversations was kind of the voice of reason. You know, he would think about it, and he'd logically bat away all the bad ideas. He'd find the flaws in my thinking. But, you know, I would fight back, and I would argue why these were good ideas. But shampoo went out the window. Another one we came up with was custom dog food, formulated, you know, for your pet's gender and activity level and breed and size, and that also got thrown out the window. And one of the ideas was video rental by mail, which was in some ways just as ridiculous as the personalized shampoo and custom dog food, because at the time, you know, there was a Blockbuster in every corner. But this was the dawn of the internet. We were watching Amazon, which, if you remember that time, was only selling books. And we go, what else is there? We didn't want to sell video, but we go, maybe we can figure out a way to rent it by mail. And that was an idea. And it was a bad idea, because back then, the only video rental that took place was with VHS cassettes, if you remember those. You know, they're heavy and expensive and fragile. And it didn't take a lot of research for me to realize that was not going to work. And so back to brainstorming, and then not too much longer, 30 or 40 days later, we read about this new technology called a DVD, that little disc which could have movies on it. And it, in some ways, it was this feeling that feeling you get when you're like, you know, maybe doing a jigsaw puzzle and you are cleaning up the couch and you find this missing piece under a cushion, and you realize this is the piece that completes the puzzle you've been working on for a while. And that was this feeling we had that, wow, this actually might unlock this video rental by mail idea that we had rejected a month or so ago. And then to prove our thesis that this little disc might be the answer, we turned the car around mid-commute and drove back down to Santa Cruz to see if we could actually mail a DVD to ourselves. But of course, there was no DVD. This was only a test market in a few cities. So we decided we'd just buy a used music CD. And we went to a used music store and bought one of those and a few doors down and bought a little gift envelope, the type you'd put a greeting card in. And we put this CD in the envelope, went to the Santa Cruz post office and bought a stamp, put it, Reed's address in the envelope and dropped it in the slot, and then went to work. And then the very next morning, when Reed picked me up, he showed me this pink envelope with an unbroken CD in it that had gotten to his house less than 24 hours later for the price of a first-class stamp. And if you look back, and if you're looking for, as a screenwriter would put it, the inciting event behind Netflix, that was probably it.
Mm. Okay, so you're a storyteller. I just really like there's a double joy here. One, to learn about how you work, and but you love stories.
You know, it's funny, because we're all genetically hardwired to be storytellers. It's almost this irony that I ended up being involved in many ways transforming how storytelling takes place, because I've always loved the story. Telling it, listening to it, being a great way to communicate with people. And a lot, you know, this is jumping way ahead. You know, but one of the things that I learned about being a leader, about what it takes to make people want to join you on these completely irrational adventures that I've been taking people on in my startup life, the most powerful way to motivate someone is storytelling.
Okay. You know, it definitely speaks to different parts of our brain rather than just the logic centers and networks, because when we're doing just logic, which there's nothing wrong with that, obviously, it triggers the logic in the other person, and then they can kind of bounce back and forth between a go or no go based on probability. But when you invoke the emotional centers and the imagination by using different circuitry, it engulfs people into, you know, what it could be and a fantasy world. And it's so much easier and compelling to walk people down a path when you've created imagination as part of the path. And so,
yeah. I'll take imagination versus logic anytime.
Yeah. So I'm imagining, and we're ping ponging back and forth, but I would imagine you're more STEAM than STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math. I imagine you're more STEAM, right? At the A for art.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's kind of what made the partnership between Reed and I work so well.
That's what I wanted to get into. Like, because let's pull on this thread about your imagination and storytelling. And I can just imagine, what kind of car were you guys driving?
Well, it was alternating between Reed's gold Avalon, this immaculately clean, consumer, middle class little car. And then I was driving a Volvo station wagon, which usually had a moldy wetsuit in the back and maybe a bike crammed into in the back. So with diapers, like not dirty ones, but like things I had picked up to bring home, like in the back seat.
So you guys are a little bit like the Odd Couple. Right. And so you, but you're okay. I mean, it's too simplified to say right brain, left brain for the two of you, but you embody that a little bit. And how did you appreciate the relationship in a way that these wild ideas that you might be exploring and you bounce over to somebody who is more linear logic and, you know, I think rational maybe in some respects, like how did you guys balance that where it felt still that there was enough space to continue exploring where you weren't critiqued and judged and shut down? Like, how did the two of you do that?
Well, listen, the short answer, of course, is respect. But of course, it's a bit more than that. You know, I do a lot of mentoring now for early stage entrepreneurs, and I warn people at the beginning. I say, you've got to be really careful, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to issue opinions with tremendous conviction that's going to make it sound like I really know the answer. And I'm warning you, I don't. It's just the way that I make and form an argument. And Reed recognized that from the very beginning. Both of us did, that we both kind of recognized that the best way to get to the right answer was this combination of logic and imagination, and that we could bat things back and forth as aggressively as we needed to. We could raise voices. I could make points about what I thought people might like. He could make points about what evidence showed that was happening. But by going back and forth vigorously without having the ego involved, we almost were able to arrive at what both of us ultimately agreed were the right decisions. And when you're with someone, you can do that. It's so refreshing, and you just immediately feel it. And I know that Reed felt that too, because proceeding from logic leaves you on a solid foundation at all times, but you just don't get that far. Mm. Whereas making these leaps of imagination, sometimes you end up way, way beyond any kind of sustainable solid ground. And both of us really liked where this combination of approaches took us.
So in the most romantic sense, how much do you miss those car rides? Because as you guys have built, and I don't know the nature of your guys' relationship. It might be very difficult. It might be wonderful. I really don't know it. But if we just kept it to the car rides, how much do you miss it? Do you still have some semblance of that creative genius outlet, combative, exploratory nature?
So we're going to have to struggle to keep this conversation on topic, because it leads into all these interesting areas.
Yeah, welcome to – the two of us are probably dangerous, right? Because we're going to bounce all over the shop. But I promise you, you know, that I've got this thing in the back of my head is this – I'm trying to understand your psychology. And I'll play it forward when we get to the end, like a bit of a snapshot. We can wrestle there too. But okay, yeah. So play this part forward, the romance of those car rides.
So the reason it's going to lead off track, and you'll see where I'm going in a second, is first of all, of course I miss it, and that it's a great way to make decisions, and it's a very pleasurable way to make decisions. So do I miss that we have the ongoing one-on-one with Reed in the car every morning and every evening? Of course. But let's talk for just 2 seconds about company culture. And company culture is not this thing that you write up on a piece of paper or that you design. It springs organically from how the founders treat each other and how you tend to act. And because Reed and I were this way, the company we built was this way. So this was not like Reed was my only outlet for this type of decision making, for this type of making progress. This was how I dealt with everybody. This was the type of people I surrounded myself with. So this was how I would work with people prior to Netflix. And even once Netflix kicked off, all of our meetings were these arguments, so to speak, these vigorous debates, trying to make intuitive leaps, but grounding them in a logic-based manner.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you will check them out. I've heard some of your interviews talking about Netflix and having a deep focus or laser focus about what they're doing. And I can't remember the exact word, but I know focus was part of it. And the second double click on that was that companies that diversify or hedge their bets, your antenna pop up a little bit. And as that relates to culture, I have that problem, is that I have three companies. And one is a partnership, a beautiful partnership with head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, and it's called Compete to Create. And both of us were founders of that, and our sleeves are not completely rolled up because we also have other projects that we're doing. He's running an NFL franchise, and I've got a couple other projects. So I'm struggling with what you're saying right now, and I'm craving that focus, but at the same time, my appetite to explore seems to take over. And so I'd love for you a little coaching. I'd love for just to hear your position on culture and business growth and appetite.
Well, so listen, I'll give you the caveat, which is I'm going to say some things with tremendous confidence.
Good man.
Which are based on 2 or 3 minutes of understanding what the real issues are. Mm-hmm. And I'll also say, of course, it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. The people that I generally talk to have an idea that they want to try and make real, a singular idea. So they're not saying, how do I do 8 things at once? I don't know. I don't have no idea how you do 8 things at once, or even 3 things at once. So you'll have to find someone else to tell you how to do 3 things at once well. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge believer that usually taking a new idea that hasn't been done before and making it successful in taking that path where you learn and change and adapt it is so difficult that it's the ultimate hubris to think that you can do that with more than one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. And that by not taking every single bit of focus you have and putting it on a singular problem, you're selling it short. And it's not easy. It's very, very easy for us to get distracted. It's very easy for us to believe that we have to get multiple components of the problem right in order to make the ultimate business successful. But what I've learned is it is very, very much a triage situation. That in any startup, there's hundreds of things that are broken, hundreds of things that are crying out for attention, that are in pain, so to speak. and that your job as an entrepreneur is to recognize that a huge group of those things, sure, they're broken, but they're not going to sink the enterprise. And a huge bunch of things are broken, and even if you get them right, it's not going to change anything. But there's a handful of things that if you get those right, all the rest of the things don't make a difference. Mm. You can list a bunch of things that would be good to get right, but just for example, you could say a culture is collaborative, but listen, right now we're in a crisis, and so right now we're going into war footing. So,
the coronavirus.
Yes, for example. But again, these are complicated scenarios. But the thing is, it changes over time. You recognize, and listen, I'll give you a more specific one. This is going to sound trite, but at the very beginning, you know, after Reed and I in the car decided, let's go for this, you know, and we put in place, Reed wrote the check, and I hired a dozen people, and we rented a little crappy old bank building with dirty carpet we couldn't afford to clean. But, you know, we said, okay, we're going to build a company. There's 100 things that go into launching a company. And you begin thinking about them all. You know, what does the website need to look like? What do our benefit packages have to be? How do I get people comfortable with this? But ultimately, if you don't have customers, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And so even though people would come in and say, Mark, help me solve this problem, help me solve that problem, I'm tuning almost everything out. I'm happy to have the website be half-assed. I'm happy to have misspellings and typos. You make a long list of all the stuff that I'm completely happy being shoddy, because I realize that if I cannot put together some way to have customers coming in the door, nothing happens. But then once customers begin coming in the door, you begin saying, what's the next big problem? If I don't get this right, we're sunk. And then if I do get this right, it lifts everything else. And you shift your attention there. And it's a constant battle to be focused on the most important thing to get right, but it's equally important to know what it is you need to focus on. And seriously, when I talk to early stage entrepreneurs, they don't need to be young. That's the biggest problem you see, is that they are all over the place. They believe they have to get everything right. They're working on things which don't count until the future. You know, I call it the selling the t-shirts. Imagine when that where brand is big. So we're putting in place this new line of merchant. I go, oh my God, every moment that you're thinking about what you'll do once you're successful is taking away from the likelihood that you actually will be successful.
And are you more interested in recurring benefit models? Or are you more interested in products that are able to endure? It seems like your business is more about recurring.
Well, certainly the ones that have, there's a pattern here, and it's because I happen to be really good at recurring revenue model stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, originally going way back, I did magazine circulation, which is all subscriptions and stuff. You know, and then once you get into the mail order business, which I was in for a long time, that's all about repeat business. And certainly Netflix's subscription model on the most recent startup, Looker, is a SaaS, you know, software as a service model, which is subscription. So yes, but that's not necessarily the thing that's most interesting to me. It's most interesting thing to me is this problem solving piece. And I'm working with some businesses which don't have subscription models in them, and they're equally fascinating.
Mark, what is your life mission?
newly minted, you know, in the last 7 or 8 years, actually. But it was interesting once I left Netflix, I decided I did not have it in me to start another company, which ended up being a resolution which didn't last that long. But nonetheless, I began saying, how do I get my entrepreneurial fix? And after a bunch of trial and error, I kind of realized the thing that really gave me that fix was mentoring other people. In other words, helping them start their companies, helping them take these ideas in their head and making them real. And as part of this process, I also began doing a lot of work with university students, with high school students, with people who are launching ideas which were not designed to change the world, but they were just dreams people had. And as I went through years of that tour of coaching, I came to this really interesting revelation, which is that all of these exact same things that I learned over 40 years as an entrepreneur, all of these little tips and tricks and secrets of how to break apart a problem, about triage and focus and culture, were equally valid no matter what your dream was. That everybody has these ideas, and the process of taking an idea and making it real is the same whether you're trying to launch a multi-million dollar tech startup or whether you just want to do something better with your own life. And so my passion from that point forward began being that my job is to take these people who have these ideas and feel that they can't go anywhere with them unless I have a degree, unless I have money, unless I have a co-founder, unless I have a backer, blah, 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 I've heard them all, and convince them that that's bullshit, that there are ways to get started, that it is not as complicated or as difficult or expensive as you think it is, and that the real barrier to getting started is you. Not you, Michael, but you, some themselves.
Okay, so...
And right. That's my mission. So there you go. So now you get me all wound up here because that is what good. I feel passionate
that's,
about.
That's what I'm about. Okay, good. So that's the mission there. And then let me do the other passenger in your car. You know, let me do the read thing, which is, and I'm way out of my, you know, knowledge base here. But okay, Mark, but how are you going to make – I know you don't really need money. You've got one of the most successful businesses on the planet right now. But how are you going to actually make that – into any sort of business? And you might come back and say, no, you said mission. You didn't say like entrepreneurial spirited business model. And so how would you, and I want to come also back. I'm saying this out loud for me, tips, tricks, and secrets. I want to come back to that in a second, but how would you answer that first part?
Well, part of it is I am unbelievably lucky in that I actually found a career that someone who has attention deficit disorder and probably couldn't hold a real job actually finds valuable and compensates you really, really well. So that's the trite answer, which is I can afford to dedicate my life to something which doesn't necessarily have a P&L attached to it. But I'll answer it more helpfully, is that I don't want this to be necessarily something which I just am Mother Teresa-ing. I do want it to be sustainable, so to speak. And there is a model where certain people are willing to pay a tremendous amount of money for this type of advice. And I've identified those people, and there's an ecosystem where you can give this. I mean, listen, for example, okay, so yeah. I give it away free to university students that I work with, mm-hmm. and I give it away free in some sense to the early stage entrepreneurs that I mentor, because I do it in exchange for equity in their companies, which
there
is
you go. Mm-hmm.
free in some ways. Mm-hmm. But I actually gave away, I have about 12 to 16 hours worth of content in my book, in That'll Never Work, and you can get that for $30,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. discounted at Amazon. Uh-huh. Or if you want to have me come speak to your conference of 2,000 or 3,000 people, I'll do that, but that's going to cost you a considerably bigger amount than $30. And when you kind of blend that whole model together, it does create something which is an economically viable business. And it's the freemium model in a way. Like right now, you know, full disclosure, you're not paying me for this. I'm doing this because I want to spread the word that people can actually do this stuff without requiring them to be a PhD in computer science. But listen, they're going to understand that, wow, this is interesting, and I do this because I can also charge Goldman Sachs to come and speak at their conference and pay them, and they'll pay me an obscene amount of money to do that. All works.
Okay, so in that respect, your new mission is really to help people unlock. And they've got an idea or a dream and that you want to help them unlock. And there's two parts to this. One is I want to understand from your perspective, your psychology, because you have unlocked. Maybe you are being I'm serious about having ADD. I don't know yet, but you've unlocked your potential and created something that has been durable and meaningful, Netflix and companies. So I do want to understand how you're helping others unlock, but to do that, let's talk about like your framework. I think you're optimistic without a doubt. Like that's part of your framework. Of course, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And then you have tripled down on trying to control what's in your control, and you're not interested in trying to manipulate, leverage, or control what others are doing. You're solely focused or laser focused on controlling or mastering what's in your control, which are your thoughts and behaviors. Is that an accurate statement?
No, that's true too. Mm-hmm.
And then you have an incredible amount of clarity for the passion that you want to live with. And then you're able to roll and deal with the difficult things. So you've got this perseverance thing. You got clarity of a vision on the other side. So you're working towards in a mission-minded, purpose-driven approach. And you deal with setbacks, whether they're internal or external, well. Is that true?
Yes, yes, doctor. You've got me wired here.
Okay, good. And then, so let's pause there for a moment. Like, how do you deal when you get a blow? You get a piece of information that is difficult, right? Like your lead salesperson, your co-founder of, maybe not co-founder, yeah. Somebody is pissed off, agitated, they're ready to walk, or they just did walk. How do you manage that?
You know, I'm trying to put it in the framework that you kind of have laid out. And even though your articulation of my of kind of how I think is correct, it's not necessarily how I think that I think.
So we either have a blind spot or like this is really clever. Okay, good. Let's go.
As my self-analysis is very, very different, is that I've become convinced how little I actually know. And how universally errant are my preconceptions of what's going to work. I've become convinced that ideas don't count for anything, that nobody knows anything, that whatever I think is right might be right, but it may not be right. Which means I set myself up in advance to be extremely comfortable with being wrong.
Yeah, this might be your crown jewel. This is what psychologists, the nerd in me is like, oh, cognitive flexibility, emotional flexibility is that you have space to say nothing is precious. Let's explore. And your ego is not involved in what you say and do. It is more the exploratory adventure in you that has created space. And I'm imagining you do the same for other people. Is that close?
Yes. So that one actually gave me a little chill.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Because that one is dead on. That's okay. Much closer to how I actually feel, but also how I think about myself.
So that's one of your crown jewels. And you know when did your hair just stand up? That's called piloerection. And that's a fun name, right? But that's how I measure success every day, Mark, is like how many times can I be so present and pure and true to something that my hair stands up? So right. I'm stoked that you just have one, you know. I compete with people.
It's like, purely because I have no hair. I mean,
yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay. All right. So space. So you create space.
And that's why. And there's a disappointment like that. It's. I'm not saying I'm Spock here that I don't have these emotional lapses and go and be disappointed and upset. And of course that happens. But it doesn't usually last long because it quickly pivots to how do I turn this around? How do I compensate for this? What have I learned from this? What can I do differently next time?
What does drop you to your knees or get you scared? Because I hear this is one of my struggles is that I've dampened my ego in such a way that I love you and I think vibrate in a very similar way about this creating the space. And I can be wrong in a lot of ways, like because I sometimes hold on to a precious idea, but you know that is not becoming. But then sometimes it looks like I'm Teflon, and things just roll right off me when I'm missing the kind of emotional connection of what's happening with people around me because it's devastating to them. And so
That's not how I am. That's okay. How, in some ways, that's one of Reed's wonderful powers, is that he has a Teflon aspect to him like that, which allows him to make incredibly difficult business decisions, but including personnel ones. I have the opposite problem. And so, you know, getting back to the thing that hurts me, it's almost the flip side of what I consider one of my real strengths. You know, we alluded to earlier the fact that I had been in, you know, the magazine circulation and subscription business, that I'd been in the mail order business. I was in the direct mail business. I had these businesses which are internet businesses. And there's something interesting about all of them, which is that all of them are selling remotely. I'm not, you know, they're working with dealing with customers you never see. And I realized really early on that I'm really good at that because I have what I don't know what it's called in your world. I call it remote empathy, which is
cool.
I have the ability to kind of sense. I mean, everyone has, most people have direct empathy, whereas you say something and you watch someone's face drop and you go, "Ooh, I just said something that disappointed them or upset them." The tricky thing is to recognize if I write an email to them, what's their reaction going to be? And it's even more if you can say, "I'm doing a piece of mail, how are they going to react to that?" And I've always been good at that. I'm very tuned to that. But what it also means is that when I have to do something which I know in my center of my being is going to hurt somebody, it's really hard for me. Mm-hmm. A weakness, in a way. Mm-hmm. I know it has to happen. I know that maybe in some ways they deserve this, but it pains me so. It's a pain I can't help. I just feel their. This is going to sound very Clinton-esque. You know, I feel their pain, mm-hmm. very viscerally, mm-hmm. and that's a problem.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. It's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real-world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep. 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability. And up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO. apolloneuro.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to aquatrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there.
What shaped you? What were the, or go back to New York, I think it was. I heard you've only leaked one little kind of New York accent in the whole time we've been speaking. And so you're very West Coast inoculated there. And I'm imagining you grew up surfing, you know, on the West Coast. Do you surf?
I surf now on the West Coast. Yeah. I took it up when I was 30 though. So okay. Didn't start that way.
Yeah. It's a tough one to pick up after puberty. I surf too. It is a tough sport in that way. So good. Nice job. Okay. So go back to what shaped you early days. I know that you've got a deep interest in the planet. You've been part of NOLS for a long time, the National Outdoor Leadership School. I think you're on the board for 1% for the planet.
Yes, correct. Right.
So you've got some sort of roots to Mother Nature. But I also want to understand what are some of the big movers that shaped you, whether they're people or events?
So that's a great path to literally and figuratively a path to go down, which is that what really did shape me is a lot of my experience outdoors, because in some ways, so many things happened there which have proxies for what happens has happened in the rest of my life, largely unpredictability, risk-taking, the sense of not knowing where a path is going to lead or how you're going to overcome an obstacle and having to figure it out on the way. And I've been doing outdoor stuff ever since I was tiny, and had parents who embraced the inherent dangers or risk-taking in going out into the outdoors. I remember even like in middle school, in sixth grade, coming home and saying, hey, we're going caving up in Albany. And rather than my parents going, what are you out of your mind? You can't go underground. They go, oh, that sounds amazing.
Oh, cool. Describe your parents in like 3 lines.
My parents in what?
3 lines, just a quick hit overview, doing them no service to their brilliance or.
Loved risk taking, but not themselves. Not that they didn't love themselves. They loved themselves.
Oh, okay.
I mean, my father was extremely risk averse, but hated himself for not being more risk tolerant. I think he pushed the opposite onto me.
Are you a risk taker or mitigator?
Risk taker.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
Absolutely. So no question about it.
Yeah, me too. I spent a lot of time in the backcountry in very dangerous environments working with some of the most extraordinary tip of the arrow performers in the world. And I like to – there's a friend of mine who I know is listening to this conversation. What's up, Mark? And we have battled on the difference between mitigation and taking from the risk perspective. And I'm really glad that you said risk-taking because Mark's now kind of, crawling back into the hole that he came from. I'm joking, Mark.
But those things are – there's old mountaineers and there's bold mountaineers, but there's very few old, bold mountaineers. Mitigating risks is you do both at the same time. And you talk about what shaped me is spending, by the time I was, 30, I'd probably spent close to 400 or 500 nights sleeping on the ground, which is a lot. And you learn a lot doing that. I was a NOLS student, then a NOLS instructor, and you learn things because those are set up to be learning situations. So you get up and it's a beautiful, clear, sunny day, and you're going to do some rock climbing on the other side of the lake. And halfway through the session, it begins to rain, and you didn't bring a raincoat. And worse than that, you left your sleeping bag out to dry.
Pause right there. How do you speak to yourself in those moments?
This was really stupid. I don't know what I was thinking.
Okay, so self-critical first? Like, do you bite yourself?
A little bit, sure.
Okay, and then what do you do?
Then you go, well, shit, I don't want to freeze to death. What do I do here? And I'm going to have to make the best of this. I mean, I'm not even sure what I do.
There it is. Okay, but then you go practical, then you go optimistic.
Yes, of course.
And then if you were to measure the amount of time that you spend in those three frames, and by the way, like there's other ones we can do, but it's self-critical or stay there. Some people stay there. It doesn't sound like you stay there long. Tactical, practical, stay there, or optimism versus pessimism. And how much time do you stay there?
Very, very little time do you stay there. I mean, you're immediately going on to, what do I do? How do I make the best of this? Or I go, well, I guess nothing's going to change the fact that I'm going to be in a wet sleeping bag tonight. So now what do we do?
Mm-hmm. So you've got a little scar tissue. You got a little hardiness in there from dealing and doing hard things in your life.
Scar tissue is the wrong word, but maybe it is. But like where I was going with that whole analogy is that even now, you know, this is 40 years later, you will not find me leaving a trailhead without the raincoat, without the extra layers, without the hat, my kids used to laugh at me, but once you've seen the impact of what happens when you're unprepared, once you've seen the capriciousness of nature, you just go, it's not a big deal to be carrying an extra pound or two. You know, I always, you know, I do a lot of crazy stuff down in the Ventana, and I carry a spot, you know, whatever that's called, satellite locator. But, you know, is that mitigation? No, that's just being careful. You know, and that's learned back when you're friggin' 13 years old.
There you go.
Bringing it forward, that happens in business all the time. As an entrepreneur, I'm lying in bed at night thinking about is my sleeping bag left out? What am I going to do if it rains? And you're preparing in your mind for all these contingencies that could happen because, again, startups are like nature. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? And you think through as many as you can. And you think through, how will I respond? And then bad stuff happens. And lo and behold, you've thought it through. And everyone goes, how did you know that was going to happen? And you go, I didn't. I prepared for about 20 other things that could have happened. And the same thing goes in the positive direction. Something breaks your way. And lo and behold, you've thought about it. But not because you anticipated that one thing. It's because you thought of 20 things, 19 of which was wasted thought.
There you go. Very cool framework. And I also love that you are particular with words. So I said scar tissue, just to rewind a moment ago, and you said, it's not that. And I love that because I feel like you and I could calibrate because of your sensitivity to words. And I don't mean sensitivity in a bad way. I mean like refined. Yeah. And so I'm imagining you do that with most people in your life. Like, no, I don't quite see it that way. I see it this way. And then you go on and maybe even tell a story to help calibrate. Is that close to how?
Of course, because when you use the word scar tissue, that's going to mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Hmm. And my little mind was like quickly zipping in and going, that sort of means that it's envision this thing which is permanent and inflexible and always influencing you. And I go, it's not really that.
So, yeah.
I was trying to get – I'm not picking on the scar tissue one. I'm trying to say that you're absolutely right, is that words are important because words conjure imagery in the people who hear them.
Yeah, me too.
And and I'm interested in helping people I'm trying to transfer an idea from my head to someone else's head. I'm trying to as the old stupid saw from the public speaking world, that they don't remember what you told them. They remember how you made them feel.
That's right.
So it's much more important to get the words right, not because the words are right, but because how you make them feel is right.
Okay. How about this thought? it all comes down to...
Oof. What does it all come... What's it all about, Alfie? Oh, wow. You know, stumped. That's a really good one that I can't riff off the top of my head because it's too important.
I love it. Let's go downstream from that just a minute, because it's not that I would imagine you don't know it, but like...
You're going to get an email from me like in like 3 or 4 weeks going, I finally
figured out what it, yeah, right, yeah.
Down to.
Okay, how about if we go downstream from it, what are some of the core guiding principles in your life that influence your thoughts, that influence the words that you choose, the actions you take or don't take? Like, what are some of those guiding principles?
So probably one of the big ones is, you know, I was even going to call my book this, but nobody knows anything, which is that all the wisdom is usually needs to be validated individually. Then when someone tells you your idea will never work, they don't really know. The only way to find things out is to try them for yourselves. That's a big piece of this. And it also applies to the things you tell yourself. That'll never work. Wait, back up. How do you know? Let's try this. It comes rock climbing where you look up at a cliff and go, I can't do that. You go, well, maybe if I start up, I'll see the route more clearly a little bit further up. I have a business idea. That'll never work. Well, wait a minute. Let's just, what can we do to begin gathering some evidence about whether my intuitions are correct or not? It's a big guiding principle for me. Mm, it's like we said earlier that I realize how little I know, and that how important it is to actually experience things to understand them.
Okay. So if you were, you are a legend, a titan in your industry, you know? Okay. So let's suspend that moment for a moment, and then say, if you were to sit down with somebody who is a master, you know, of craft and or self, and I'm more interested in people that are in reverse order, master of self and then craft. Right. But let's say you were to sit down with somebody who's a master. What would you want to ask them? One question.
I don't know how to do it in one question. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, wow, that sounds interesting, which is my sitting next to someone at a bar statement. Mm-hmm. My son, you know, he's an adult, but he had to write a recommendation for me for something. And it was really interesting. He goes, my dad is the kind of person who will end up sitting next to someone at a bar, and no matter what they do or who they are or where they're from, he'll end up talking to them for like an hour because he's so genuinely curious about who they are and where they came from. And it's so completely true about me. You know, I'll meet someone who is a sanitation worker, or I'll meet someone who is a cafeteria worker, or I'll meet someone who's a brain surgeon, and I just insatiably curious, but wow, that sounds really interesting. And off it goes.
There you go. Okay. So curiosity is a big part of your framework. You would use that on them, not on them, but with them. And you are more interested in who they are than what they do.
They're linked.
They are linked. They inform. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing is, because at least in this country, what you do is so tied to who you are. I mean, it's interesting when you travel and you speak to, in the United States, we go, "What do you do?" as the way of defining who someone is. You know, in England, they'll go, "Where are you from?" I mean, it's like different ways of defining people. But all of these things are interesting to hear people's background and what's interesting to them and what challenges did they overcome? I mean, I think what probably makes your job, at least the podcast host part of your job, so fascinating.
People are amazing. You know, like human capacity and capabilities are amazing. I don't think we understand human limits yet by any means.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you know, we are governed in radical ways that is yet to be untapped. And the main governor at this point is committed focus to the present moment and a ridiculous, and I use that word purposely, fear of what other humans are going to think of us when we express. And so we're not going to get to human potential, one's own or collectively, unless we figure out how to stay in the present moment long enough and to authentically express. And if you don't match that with some sort of risk, and the most dangerous thing that people are engaging right now is the risk of what others think of them. And it is ridiculous at some level, but it is so primal at another that I understand it. And I've lived it and wrestled with it most of my life, you know, early days, I should say, the anxiety of others' approval. And so, I'm fascinated by human potential, and we have so far to go.
Well, it's really interesting what you just said, which is that is the most powerful fear of not belonging, of being drummed out of the tribe that we all needed back prehistorically to survive.
Yeah.
And that just is something we have to fight against all the time.
Well, it's happening right now with the corona, let's call it social isolation, but it's really social distancing.
Yeah.
Is that there's going to be a point of flexion here where as we start to distance ourselves and the threat is invisible, you know, the coronavirus is invisible, but the host of the threat is our people, our humans. And so there's a weird thing that's taking place where we don't know how to fit right now with each other. And I'm sure it's going to pass, but it might pull us deeper together post, you know, like as the pendulum swings.
Yeah.
But we got to get this thing right now. You know, we really got to get it right.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Listen, Mark, I've really embraced this conversation. Your intelligence is obvious. Your empathy is high. Your commitment to take risks and to explore and to create space for other people are part of your crown jewels. And at least from this conversation, and it feels to me that you learned so much from Mother Nature that you carry that forward into how you work with people and you work with decision making. So I just want to say thank you for your time. And I just appreciate the tone that you operate with, and it just feels warm and thoughtful.
Well, thanks, Michael. This is actually really, really interesting. Usually I spend all my time exploring other people, and it was kind of fun to be asked these questions. It made me kind of explore who I am too.
There you go. Okay. So where can people get your book? Where can they follow along? Where can the next steps be?
The book is That Will Never Work, The Birth of Netflix and the Amazing Life of an Idea, available at booksellers near you, as they say. And it's not a business book, but it has all those tips and tricks and secrets that I have learned over my career. Or you can follow me on Twitter at @MBRandolph or on LinkedIn, Facebook, all the usual places.
I've so appreciated the framework that we've kind of chiseled out together on this call. So I want to encourage people to go get your book. To follow along and to be better because of the commitment you've made to help people be better as well.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks again for your time too.
Okay, Mark. All the best to you. Take care.
Cheers.
Okay, bye.
All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.